Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we explore, of course, UFOs and the paranormal, with a focus on UFOs because I have to tell you, UFOs are my favorite subject, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. We have an amazing guest. She's a UFO contactee. Her name is Shirley Klein-Karsh. And she has had years of experiences with what appear to be friendly extraterrestrials. And also on the show with us tonight will be Dina Black, who with Shirley has written a book about Shirley's experiences called The Artist and the Alien, which is coming out soon. But before I introduce my guests, let me give you a little bit of the UFO news, because of course there is stuff going on. And let me start with the MUFON Monthly Statistical Report, which has just come out for June 2007. And not surprisingly, the UFOs are still here. They're still showing up all across the world. And the United States actually leads the number of reports with 174. The top five countries are the United States first, Canada second with 17 reports, Egypt with 6 reports, the United Kingdom with 4, and surprisingly, the Netherlands with 2. So that's kind of interesting, I think. But in the United States, the top 5 states are California with 25, Oregon with 16, Michigan and Colorado both have 14, and Indiana is 9. So yes, UFOs are appearing all over the place in many different shapes and sizes. And last month there were 9 landings and 10 reports of entities. So that's pretty interesting. There's lots of stuff going on. A very interesting sighting just occurred recently in Turkey. This was on June 30th over the city of Didim. That's D-I-D-I-M. And this sighting involved several witnesses. Apparently a large, yellow, melon-shaped object was sighted by several witnesses, including police officers. The sighting began at around 9:30 p.m. Two witnesses, Phil and Lorraine Quibel, spotted the lights just a few hundred meters off the ground as they were walking next to the police academy. And they said the lights were moving very quickly in a straight line before swerving directly towards the police academy and then moving out to sea and disappearing over the horizon. Mr. Quibel, he said it was something he's never experienced before in his life, and as he says, I'm still trying to explain it away rationally, hours after we had seen it. Both of us have never seen anything like it in our lives. There were actually 2 police guards who also saw it and had a hard time believing their eyes because this object did not have wings or any landing lights. It was definitely not a plane, the witnesses say. There were several other witnesses. Another witness, Alana Weatherall, described it as a bright light, but nothing like a plane or a helicopter. She said it seemed to hover for a number of seconds and burn like a white ball of light, and then it just kind of faded out altogether. Another witness, Mark Weatherall, he said what surprised us was that it seemed to go vertically up from its original position. It was a weird experience, but it definitely wasn't a plane. It must have been a UFO. So it's a pretty interesting sighting. And what else is going on? Of course, if you're any fans of Roswell and know anything about the UFO phenomenon, Roswell, it's the anniversary. 60 years ago, this week, is the anniversary of the famous Roswell UFO crash in New Mexico, in which the government allegedly obtained a crashed UFO and alien bodies. This is, of course, the penultimate UFO case and continues to bring out new information. Just recently, one of the major witnesses has passed away, but he left what amounts to a deathbed confession. He signed an affidavit revealing that he not only saw the wreckage, but he saw the bodies. He had not said this before, but Walter Hout was serving as the base's public information officer. And he was there at the time of the UFO crash. And he claims now that he has actually seen the wreckage. He says he was permitted from a safe distance to observe this object. He says it was approximately 12 to 15 feet in length, not quite as wide, about 6 feet high, and more of an egg shape. He said the lighting was poor, but its surface did appear to be metallic. There were no windows, portholes, wings, tail section, or landing gear visible. And he also says, this is one of his statements that he signed in his affidavit, from a distance I was able to see a couple of bodies under a canvas tarpaulin. Only the heads extended beyond the covering, and I was not able to make out any features. The heads did appear larger than normal, and the contour of the canvas suggested the size of a 10-year-old child. At a later date in Blanchard's office, he described them as being about 4 feet in height. And he was informed of a morgue that was set up to hold the bodies, and he was also told that the wreckage was not radioactive, among other things. So it's a pretty interesting revelation. The Roswell crash is still going on. There's new information coming out. We have not seen the end of that case. And let me see what else. I just want to remind readers that my latest book is out, The Coronado Island UFO Incident, which is available on Amazon.com and at Galdi Press. It's a very exciting story about 8 people who experienced a simultaneous UFO encounter in a hotel room on Coronado Island. So if you get a chance, check that out. But now let's get to our guest tonight. Our guest is Shirley Klein-Karsh, and she is a UFO contactee. And also joining us is Dina Black, who with Shirley has co-authored a book called The Artist and the Alien about Shirley's experiences. So let's just get right to our guest. Shirley, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Shirley. And Dina, are you there as well?
Yeah, I need to correct you on my name. It's nope. B-L-A-T-T.
Oh, okay.
And D-E-N-A.
Okay, if you can speak as loudly as possible to the phone, that would be good.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, I can hear you.
I have a hard time hearing here on this end.
Yes, no, I can hear you.
Okay. Well, thank you for coming to the show.
Thanks very much for inviting us.
Thank you.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, I'm really excited. So, Shirley.
Yes? It's Shirley, by the way.
Shirley.
Yes.
So did you believe in UFOs growing up?
I knew nothing about them until I had that experience. And it's a funny thing, when I had the first experience, when two people appeared in front of me and I end up at the foot of the bed, I woke up my husband. I said, two space people. How did I ever know about space people? I have no idea, but out it came. So I must have been taken, and as far as missing time, I knew nothing, nothing at all. But after that, I really went to investigate.
Wow.
But my main thought in the whole world was that there must be other life forms, not only on this Earth, but look at the stars and everything. It's too gigantic. It cannot be just one little place like Earth that there's life forms.
Right.
There has to be
that.
Others.
Right. What about you, Dina? Have you seen UFOs growing up?
I figured that there was life on other planets, but I didn't give it much thought. And only when I met Shirley did I do any real reading and investigating. It was only till I met her.
Well, how did you meet Shirley?
Oh, that was very interesting. I was at a whole life expo, and it was the last day, and I was about to leave, and she had a booth close to the exit, and she was telling people that she had written about her experiences with an alien, a two-year experience, and something happened to me right then. I looked at her, and I absolutely knew she was telling the truth. It just felt like I was living in an age where people thought the world was flat, and I knew it was round. And at the same instant, I felt that I was supposed to know her, and I pursued it. Even though the first time I called her, it seemed that she didn't remember me, but I called again. And when I finally did meet her and we became friends, I realized we had a lot in common. We had her parents and my parents came from the same area, Poland, Russia. We both were living in Montreal at the same time but never met. We both were going to the same night college and never met. We both had a common friend and didn't know it. And we both married survivors of the Holocaust.
Oh, wow. Something for just destiny, huh?
That's kind of strange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say so. Yeah.
And then these were all what I call synchronicities, and a lot in the book is about synchronicities.
Wow. Well, so, Shirley, your first experience was...
My first experience was, as I said, I was studying for an exam, and when these two people appeared in front of me, and they were talking, and I could hear what they were saying in my head. And because no vocal at all, you know, just everything I heard was in my head.
Wow.
And they said, "Shall we take her?" And they looked really hard at me, and they said, "No, not yet." But obviously they did take me, because I ended up in the foot of the bed.
Hmm.
Why they said, "No, not yet," and that was it, I don't know. I have no idea.
What did your husband think when you told him?
Well, I told him, he says, "Don't you dare say anything, because here you are, an artist. You have two small children. You've gone back to school," which at that time nobody was doing what I was doing. And he says, "Don't you dare say it, because they'll think that you're crazy and they'll take you away." So I didn't say anything, but I kept lookout. I tried finding a book, anything. There was nothing.
I
went into a secondhand bookstore, and I came across Adamski. Oh, it was a piece of what they call heaven for me, because here was a man that did have contact and everything, and everything he was saying, I just ate everything he said.
Wow.
And it made me feel really good, because at least I knew I wasn't crazy.
Right. Well, back in these days, there wasn't a lot of talk about UFO aliens as much as, I mean, there was UFO talk, but people, as far as reporting entities,
yes,
there wasn't really a lot of that.
No, there wasn't. There wasn't anything, and I had nobody I could talk to. Nobody, and I wouldn't dare say anything because, as I said again, they didn't know anything. I didn't either. But I remember looking in the paper, and there was a small little advertisement that some scientists were here to talk on UFOs. Well, I said to my husband, "I'm going." He said, "Well, I'll come with you." And we went, and we discovered that the scientists were working with some of the aliens from, I hate saying aliens, these space people from other planets, helping us get into space. Because we would be the third planet to be able to get into space. So this meeting was absolutely incredible. I met a lot of the scientists and asked them a lot of questions. And as I said again, I knew I was in the right direction.
Wow.
And I kept searching and searching, because that's what my contact in Vancouver said. You have searched. And because you have searched, I'm here. In other words, when you're ready, a teacher appears. And this was a teacher who was from another planet, because I was interested in that.
Wow. So your first experience occurred when? In like 1960?
No, this occurred, what do you call it? I mean, this live alien? 1971.
This was when
I was out on a date with a professor. He was a mathematician. And we were going to a movie, and we went driving by, and I suddenly saw this secondhand store. And I said to my friend, I said, "I've got to go into the store." And he says to me, "You're crazy. What's the matter? What is there? Look at it. It's terrible." You know, everything all over the place. I said, "I don't know. I have to go in. I just have to go in." And when I went in, I said to myself, "What the heck am I doing here? What drew me here?" And I looked at this man sitting on a stool, and he's doing some equations. And my friend, who's a mathematician, walks over, and he says, "My God, what are you doing? What kind of math is this?" And the gentleman said, "It's not of this world." And I said to myself, "Oh, God, I'm not..."
Did he look like a
because
normal guy?
I expected a space person to look totally different, and that didn't look like that, you know? And he turned to me, and his eyes piercing, big black eyes. And he just looked at me like he could see everything I said. And I said, oh, my gosh. I said, so when are they going to take me? Because of the last experience that I had. And all he answered was, I'll find out for you. Well, that wasn't the answer I wanted to hear.
what did this gentleman look like?
Well, he looked like he belonged to the interior. he just blended into the place. He had, you know, a shirt on, pants. The only thing is he had hair down to his ears, like a cut straight. And he had very piercing eyes, extremely piercing eyes. I've never seen such eyes like this before.
Wow.
And he was very, you know, normal and talking. And my friend was asking questions, and he wouldn't answer him. He was so upset when we left the store. I had to buy something. I bought something from, I don't know, a few little things here, because I had for my own satisfaction. I felt that I came in for nothing, you know. And I left, and I kept coming back.
Well, this guy, he said,
and he said to me, "You're not going to see this man anymore. He's too negative for you." And I said to myself, "My God, who is he to tell me who I'm going to see and who I'm not going to see?" You know,
right.
He took responsibility right away, and he was sort of anxious to look after me. And I kept coming back. It took me 6 months to accept him that he was not from here. I tested him. I tried to trick him. I did everything you can think of. I even went to the owner of the shop. And I said, who is this man? He said, well, he came to me and he said to me, I'll do all your electronics for free. All I want you to do is put a bed in the back of the store so I can lie down and rest every now and then. Well, who works for free?
Huh.
Can you tell me anybody working for free?
No, I don't know anyone.
That's right, nobody. And not only that, I once bought him a hamburger. And he just looked at me and he took the hamburger. To this day, I don't know if he ate it. I know I ate mine, but I don't know if he ate his. He had a way of just distracting you somehow and taking it out of your mind. I don't know, it's amazing. Like I was once off to a party, and suddenly I'm driving, and suddenly I had to go to the store to see Frank. That's what he wanted me to call him, because that's his earth name. He's the other name is too hard for me, and he wants me to call him Frank. So I turned the car around, and I went to Frank, and he looked at his watch. Well, not bad. 15 minutes, and you made it. I said, what do you mean? I said, you called me? Is that why I had the feeling I had to come and see you? He says, of course, that's how I do it.
Huh.
So they know how to manipulate you.
But he would speak to you, you know, through a normal voice.
Pardon?
He spoke with a normal voice, not telepathically?
No, verbally.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Telepathically, no.
Wow.
He never did. Because I was there, why would he have to do that? He can talk, regularly.
He said flat out that he was an E.T.?
Well, as I said, after testing him, I realized that he was an E.T. And he also, what he called, showed me different places on different planets through the television without a plug.
You kidding?
I looked for the plug. I thought maybe it was inside the television. No?
What did you see?
I saw what he called other planets. I saw the people on the planets. I saw him contacting his space person in space. He was talking to him.
Wow.
And it was just, I tell you, I quite an experience.
Wow.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I met a man, and he said to me, he came over to me and said to me, you know, there's something I have to do for you, I don't know what it is. And I said, you know what, just to get rid of him, I said, would you like to meet a real live alien? Oh, my God, could you really introduce me to him? So I brought him and didn't... And he accepted him right away.
Wow.
I didn't. It took me 6 months to accept him. So I was very cautious.
Right.
He started telling me things after he knew I accepted him. Otherwise, he did not. I asked him questions. He told me the question I asked. He answered it. But it didn't go any further.
Wow. So, Dina,
tell us
about this book that you guys are putting together.
Okay. The first part, I tell Shirley's story, and it's a lot about why she felt so alienated. And I had to do a lot of reading, research on all the
indigo and
The books on the Star Children. I read indigo books by Lee Carroll and Jan Tober.
Right.
From Elsewhere and Universal Vision by Scott Mandelker, and Star Children by Jenny Randles. And they're the ones that educated me on Indigo's Wonders and Star Children. Otherwise, I really could not understand Shirley. That made me understand where she was coming from, because all of the people who felt alienation were very much like Shirley.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so I go into that quite a bit. And
see, because I never felt I belonged here.
Yeah, that you didn't feel your parents were.
No, I didn't feel my parents were mine.
Earth was your home.
Yeah.
And these others in the book, there are many examples of the same feeling, people with the same feeling.
Right.
And the book, the first part, part one, the book's subtitle is Guidance, Warnings, and Hope from an E.T. Living Among Us. So I go into guidance. It's about synchronicities, really. That's what's back of it. And the warnings, what he did was warn through Shirley, warn her about natural and man-made catastrophes, and that we have to save the ecology. Well, this is all contactees get the same messages. But he gave her three missions. The first one, that she was to paint planets that have destroyed themselves. And her final mission was to, when the catastrophes come, that she would have a job saving children. She would be bringing children to UFOs. And the third was to learn and practice compassion, that's the answer, the only answer. That's what hope comes in.
Wow.
How and where to survive, and the answer is compassion.
Yes, and forgiveness.
That's fascinating. I mean, this is just so far removed from a lot of the reports you hear of people being abducted by gray-type ETs and being examined.
That's only part one of the book. That's her story. Part two, I titled that, Why Shirley? Because everybody asks me, why Shirley? I mean, there are plenty of people.
I'm just lucky.
Know, but what was it about Shirley? And I go into all the factors leading up to that could be factors leading up to contact with Frank. And there were many, many, many of paranormal, metaphysical that Shirley had. Some of them were seeing dead in solid form, bilocation, teleportation, telekinesis, seeing ghosts, going into the future, seeing the future, going into the past, and then a lot of going into other dimensions where, and from there she did her art in other dimensions.
Yes.
So I go into that. And then part three of the book, her life after Frank left, and more paranormal experiences, and there's a lot about her life after Frank. And then what's it all about? And I go into what it means to us personally, spiritually, and politically, like preventing Star Wars, possibly.
Right.
And
right.
The spiritual aspect, like going from fourth to fifth dimension. Then I have part four, where I feel that the book, there's so much for UFO buffs, but nothing for the ordinary person who really does. He's interested, open, but doesn't really know or stop to think where to look for information. And so I made a concise overview of the UFO phenomena for those who want to make a study. And it includes saying activists and their work and prophecies and suggested reading.
And I want to say one thing. I did not co-author with Dina Blatt. She wrote this book by herself.
Oh, I see.
She is the complete author.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Okay. So when is the book coming out?
Well, in about a month.
Oh, how exciting.
Yeah, I felt that there's so much on the Internet for people who already are delving into it, know quite a bit. But I'm meeting a lot of people, ordinary people, who really want to know more. And so I thought this book was for them, but it's very hard to reach them if they don't know where to look.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping the radio helps.
Oh, I'm sure they do. I'm sure it does.
I meet a lot of people who say, all right, okay, so UFOs are real, okay, so what? They keep on saying, so what?
Yeah, what does that mean?
And my book is really for them, that it's important for us to have more knowledge. But where do they start, the ordinary people, where do they start? See, those that already know, there's so much knowledge, so much.
Yes. Well, and I tell you, it's so marvelous that there is so much knowledge, because in my time, there wasn't anything. It was so hard to get any books or anything. As I said, when I came across Adamski, I thought, my God, it was... If somebody offered me $1 million, I wouldn't sell the book.
You know, the thing I was trying to bring out was that a lot of people don't know much about contactees like Shirley or what they went through, and that they have positive experiences. A lot of people don't know there's such a thing as positive experience. They only hear about
negative experiences. Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, the contactee phenomena, a lot of people think it was confined to the 1950s with people like George Adamski and, you know, George Van Tassel, Daniel Fry.
Yeah, they were positive experiences.
It's still going on, though. I mean, there's a lot of people like you, Shirley, who are having or have had experiences with what appear to be human-looking extraterrestrials.
Yeah, we're hearing more about them. Michael Sala's book that just came out is about this, but it's about the political implications mainly.
Uh-huh. Right,
you mean there's
exopolitics.
Aliens in the White House?
Yeah, well, it's about everything to do with the fact that there could be ETs and hybrids walking around among us.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
could be. There is. There's no doubt in my mind that there is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, but some years ago, there wasn't much talk about it. I couldn't find anything.
But the government hasn't helped in this capacity either, and that's what amazes me. Because people start coming out that they feel for sure that the government is holding things back.
Yeah, well, I feel certain that they are, you know, have some of the crashed UFOs.
Yeah, I know, but they sort of, as it goes over their head, let's put it that way.
Right.
And, you know, since the government hasn't said anything, so maybe it's not true.
Did Frank say anything about our government's involvement with UFOs and what he knew about that?
No, nothing.
I didn't quite get you.
I was wondering, you know, what kind of information Frank gave about, you know, the UFO activity on Earth, or if our government is involved and things like that.
Well, I'm sure they all know about it, but they just will not say anything. Mind you, I'm glad that the files of France have opened up, and England, that's two. Maybe eventually the United States, because the United States has so much information. I'd love to hear some of it.
Right. Well, it's going to come out sooner or later.
It will eventually. It has to.
Right, I think so.
Well, it's like in Lima, Peru, the other day there was a fleet of UFOs, but
that's right.
You didn't hear about it in any U.S.
No.
media.
No. Just on the internet that you get stuff.
I know. No, there's still an active cover-up.
I know. I don't know what they're afraid of. It's so ridiculous. Really, it is. What are they afraid of? That everybody's going to go crazy? Is that it?
I can't imagine that people would go crazy. I mean,
I can't believe that either. You mean their religion will change? I have news for you. I think religion is changing anyway, regardless.
Right, I was just going to say that. The Earth has got a lot of things that need improving, and I think that's what they're trying to do with encounters like yours. I mean, that's what that was his main mission, right? Is that why he's here on Earth, did he say?
Well, I don't know. I don't know why they're covering it over. It's ridiculous. But anyway, I guess they love secrets. But the trouble is, you know, with a secret, eventually it comes out, sooner or later.
Right.
But it all does. You cannot keep things from the public.
Right.
The public is too smart. They think they're not smart. That's our trouble with our government. They think the public is not smart, but they are smart. They're reading more.
Wow.
So they want to know more.
So tell us more about Frank and how many meetings did you have with him?
Well, I tell you, with Frank, as I said, it was wonderful. I was in the store talking with him, and then he said to me, "My God, the vibration here is terrible. There were some people in the store, and he didn't like their vibration. And they all looked like nice people to me." And he says, "No, their vibration is very bad."
Huh.
He picked up on that right away. I didn't. I mean, and I was surprised because I looked at them, and they looked like very nice people. But I guess he could see otherwise.
Wow.
And, as a matter of fact, he told me to make him 3 paintings, which I did. And one was Pegasus, and he said that was a negative planet. And the other one was a inside the spaceship, the all the mechanics and everything else. I drew all that, and he was surprised. He says, "That's very good." That is in the spacecraft. And another one, I do not remember what it is. I don't remember. He took the 3 of them, and suddenly an apparatus appeared on the wall. I don't know where it wasn't there before, but suddenly it was there. He rolled them up, and he just, like, you know what? You sometimes see it the Safeway or some of the other stores. They put money in, and it goes right up.
He faxed it.
Right.
No, he didn't fax it, but it just left. I don't know, honestly. I've never seen anything like that. He says, "That's going right into my planet." And the next time I saw him, he says, "You know what?" He says, "It's in the gallery in one of my on the planet." And he says, "And people are really interested in it." I thought, really? Yes, as a matter of fact, everything you paint is being transferred into my planet. We are interested in your work.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, when I was going down to Australia, well, of course, I'm going ahead of my story, because this man that I brought to meet Frank, who accepted him, eventually he asked me to marry him, and I went to see Frank about that, because I didn't really love him. I mean, I liked him. He was a nice guy and all that, and he wants to marry me, and he said to me right away, Frank said to me, "Marry him." I said, "Well, I don't know what... Marry him." I didn't know then that, but Arnie told me later that he was what he called a Roman soldier, and he arrested me, and it seems I killed him. So I had to make amends. This was one of my karmic additions that I had to straighten out. I had to marry him to straighten out his life because I took it away from him.
Wow.
So, but he did say that I wasn't going to be with him long, which I wasn't with him very long down in Australia. I got him down. I sold all my furniture to get him to what he called a ticket to get down to Australia, because he said that here he had difficulty getting a job, and down there it was easy for him. So I said, fine. And I looked after that, and he went down there. And anyway, it was time. I figured, I don't know, but... A few months went by, and I don't know how he was doing or what, I mean, it got the odd letter, but nothing very much, and I decided I'm going to go down. I'll take all my stuff, the rest of the stuff, and take it with me. And I said, what am I going to do with my paintings? And Frank said to me, you're allowed two paintings to take. If you take more, we will sink the ship. I said, oh, my God, don't you dare do that. And I talked them into, I can take four. So I took four paintings. The rest, a friend of mine called me one day and said to me, I have a basement and it's empty. Do you want to leave your paintings here for a while? I said, oh, could I? And he even arranged a truck to take all my paintings and bring them to there because he said that my paintings were very important. And so that's where it went. And when I was going down there, the painting, everything did not, all my clothes and everything didn't get there until I got there, until I had a place. But when I came there, I sent Arnie a cable. Obviously, he didn't get it because nobody was at the airport. And I really felt really lost. I was in a strange land. I didn't know who, anybody. Anyway, I was surprised. I said to myself, so, Frank, why did you send me down here? Look at what I'm having, all these problems. Of course, I didn't answer, nothing answered. I went to the last address I got from Arnie, and somebody at the building said, nobody but that person lives here. Fine. So I went to the owner of the building, and I said, he said to me, well, maybe he doesn't want to be found. I said, yes, he does want to be found. He said, a lot of people come to Australia to lose themselves so that nobody should know where they are. I said, well, this is not the case.
All right.
And he said, well, he said, I have a person looking after the building. Where will you be? And I asked the taxi driver, where's the closest hotel or wherever I could stay? And he gave me the place of a hotel. And I went there and waited for somebody to call. Well, somebody did call and told me that, yes, Arnie is there, and he comes home from work at 5 o'clock. Well, that's exactly what it did. 5 o'clock, I took a taxi and got there. And when he saw me, he was stunned. I said, didn't you get my cable or my telegram? He said, no, I did not. And anyway, so, yeah, and he took me to a little place, a tiny little place. I said, my God, that's what I sold all my furniture for? And what kind of job do you have? He had a very menial job. It was awful. Anyway, I gave him the encouragement and everything. He finally got himself a very good job working for the government of Sydney in the boiler room or whatever. I don't know, something he was doing. So at least he was working there, and he had a good job. So I felt better about that. And I went out the next day, and I got myself a job selling shoes. I had to sell 50 pairs of shoes a day. Otherwise, they would can me. And I sold 50 pairs of shoes a day, and not only that, it came back what he called to the owner of the shoe store that how nice I was and so forth, and they offered me a promotion. And I also worked in the art gallery the weekends, so I can get enough money to come back here.
Wow.
Anyway.
Frank was teaching you. You came to there to learn self-sufficiency.
Oh, yes. To learn that I can be capable of looking after myself.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Because when I married very young, and my husband looked after me, and I was, I guess what he called it, used to having people take care of me. So I learned that I can do it myself, that I can I can do everything myself, which I did.
Mm.
And that was a very good lesson, but it was very, very interesting.
Yeah, he was guiding you real carefully.
Yes. Oh, yes.
In every area.
In every area. Right. He even said, I had to sell some of my things. And he says, four times he's come for me. And four times I obviously rejected him.
Oh, in past lives and stuff?
In different eras, different times. And I did sell my things. And one day I walk into the shop and he said to me, don't sell everything. You might need some of the stuff. I said, now you're telling me? I got rid of the stuff that I really wanted.
Did Did he ever say where, what planet he was from?
Yeah, well, it was crystals and things and all that. But anyway,
but the point
is, he was helping me evolve. That was his job, so that he could give me another job.
Well, did he ever say what planet he was from?
Yeah, well, he didn't tell me. He says I come from another galaxy.
Yeah, no, he told Arnie that he was
from. He told Arnie.
And Arnie told me when I interviewed him.
Oh, I see.
And also, I went to a seance in France, and they told me that he was from Sirius B. He also told me that they had an atomic war, and half the planet had broke in four pieces. They have A, B, C, and D.
Huh.
And Sirius is not the whole planet. It's in four sections. And one section that the people, what do you call it, are mythological figures, like the Greek mythology.
Right.
Yeah, so that's what they had. Some of the best, he says, this would be horrible if Earth did this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Genetic mutations, you mean.
So did he say why he contacted you?
Me, he says, because I love God so much. And I said, yeah, which God is that? He says, there's only one creator, and we all abide by the creator. So I liked his answer.
Wow.
If he would have mentioned by name and all that, I don't think I would have been very happy. Because that's very limiting.
Right.
Yeah, no, that's why he contacted me, because of that, and also because I searched and I wanted to know.
Now, he gave you information about the future?
Well, the future is very difficult. It's very difficult because mankind is only knows war. Any little thing, they're off to war. And the catastrophe is going to be that they are going to use, unfortunately, atomic energy. And it's going to be so bad that they're going to take some people away from here. And then when they live in space for a while, in the spaceship, and then when everything settles and all that, to come back here to start again. But this time, we'll take computers and take all of the other stuff so you won't have to start from scratch.
Wow.
Well, that's good to hear. Because other times it's happened before, the natural catastrophe, and they took certain people away and then brought them back. They have to start from scratch again.
Wow. Did they say when this might happen, all these catastrophes?
Well, that either natural or atomic usage.
Or,
yeah, so this is where our problem lies. And mankind has to change. Oh, God, I would love to see. This is such a beautiful planet.
Said that there's spiritual evolution that's inevitable, whether
I know
what we do.
But until then,
yeah.
Until then, you know, so we are trying to get into the fifth dimension.
Right.
Or the fifth, eh?
Right.
Yeah, so this is it. So this, there's always, it seems to me, has to be a forerunner. Like the Indigo Children, that I had no idea that that's where I was. But I met somebody with Dina, and she looked at me and says, my God, she says, you're an Indigo child. I looked at her. I go, how do you know? She says, there's something in your aura that tells me so.
Huh.
Now, I had no idea. Because I drove my parents crazy.
In what way?
Well, by telling them that they're not my parents. And my whole attitude and my thinking, let's not walk on the grass because it hurts the grass. Things of that nature that nobody's heard.
Right.
You know, and I just felt alienated here. I didn't feel like I belonged here. I didn't know where. As a matter of fact, Frank said to me, we're trying to find a place for you because you've never found the place where you belong.
Wow.
He said that to me.
Wow.
And I still haven't really found it. I'm just living. I'm visiting. Yeah. I'm just visiting this planet.
I feel the same way sometimes, actually. Now, tell us about the last meetings, the last few times you saw Frank and what he
what?
Said. And did he say he would never come back?
Here?
Frank, yeah.
Oh, you mean Frank? Well, Frank, when he left, he gave me 8 copper plates with alien writing on it. And I said, so what am I going to do with this? And he says to me, put it away. You'll need it when the time comes. And how will I need it? I have no idea. I have had people try to decipher it, and they have not. They can't. Everybody gives me another answer. It's not. There was a lady down in Arizona, which she's now deceased, and she wrote out some stuff that she was taught as a child, that somebody had come into her room and teach her alien writing. So she wrote out what she thought was what she thought of those plates, but I don't know. I don't have the confidence in that, so I don't know. This is where I am with, is with my 8 copper plates, and that's it. I do know one is my vibration, and another one is the planet we're going to, but that's about all. I don't know what the others mean.
They have
it's
writing
a binary code, a total different binary code. I don't know. Maybe in time, maybe in the future, it'll be used. I don't know.
Have you seen these things,
I felt so sad when he was ready to leave. He made me go back to Montreal and try and retrieve. I loaned money. As a matter of fact, friends of mine came and asked me, begged me to loan them my inheritance. My husband died, and I did. I loaned them for just a time, and I couldn't get it back. They didn't give me back. So my Frank said, "Go back." He says, "We have to give him one more chance." So I went back, try and get money, and no, it's all tied up. It can't get to me, and so forth and so on. I came back, and Frank knew about it. A week later, he died. So I don't know. Maybe they took him or whatever. I don't know. Because you don't do that to a widow. Because I'm not functioning too well once your husband dies.
Wow.
You know, and anyway, that was... So I lost all my inheritance. Yeah. I was rich 1 minute and then poor the next. So,
well,
anyway.
Riches come in many forms. your experiences are very interesting and have certainly enriched your life, I would say.
On
these copper plates, there's writing on them that you can see?
Yes. Huh. He took an indelible sort of instrument and he wrote on it. He was telepathically, he was getting the messages.
You also have his writing, though.
I have... A little bit of it. He wrote a letter once to somebody, and I don't know why I didn't photocopy it or something. I don't know why I didn't do it. I didn't do a lot of things.
Well,
I had no idea that I would eventually use all the stuff that he gave me. He gave me a copper bracelet for my arthritis, and I lost it. Of course, now I've got arthritis. But I was wearing that bracelet, and that would have saved me from having arthritis.
Really?
Yeah,
it a normal-looking bracelet?
He put something in it that would help me.
Wow.
So I lost it. You know, I lost a few things he gave me. He gave me a plate, a small disc here with my space name. I lost that.
You know, I've done a lot of research in this area, and there's a number of people who have been given gifts similar to what you're describing.
And they lost them?
No, not in every case. Some of them are being studied, but, you know, some people have gotten medallions, some people have gotten chunks of metal with writing on them and things like that.
Yeah, well, I lost everything he gave me, except the plate, a certain belt that I have, that I have. I have to go flying anywhere. I have to use that because they said that if anything happens to the plane, they will beam the plane down.
Wow.
He had a way of removing it, removing things from you, dematerializing it.
Yes. Well, anyway, so this is what I have to do, so be able to fly. As a matter of fact, if a fog comes about, I should know that there isn't a spacecraft following me. They will not let me fly.
Shirley, have you ever seen one of their ships?
Yes. Yes, I have. Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, and my husband, there was a, we were on our way to Reno, and there was a ship with lights and portholes and so forth. And I says, Fred, take a look at this. And he looks at his, it's a beacon. I said, a beacon this high up? How could that be? He would not admit that it was a spaceship. It can't be. it's a beacon. We also lost a day in the desert. A whole day.
Wow.
You believe it?
Yeah.
Because a friend of mine called me up, a psychic, and said, Shirley, you're going to be in an accident. I said, well, if I have to be in an accident, I'll be in an accident. Anyway, we leave Reno, and we're just going to Vegas. No, that's not very far away from Reno to Vegas. And
right.
We went in for breakfast, and we came out. We can't start the van. It's a brand-new van, and suddenly we can't start it. We had to get a mechanic, and he said it was a starter. Okay. We had to stop to get gas, so we tried to find a gas station that had a little bump so that we could push the car before we get it. And then I were driving, and I said, Fred, we passed this place before. I think there was a certain strange tree, really strange. I've never seen anything like it. I said, I've seen this tree before. How is it possible? And Fred said to me, you know, I feel very strange myself. And we had to push the car. We finally got to Vegas, and I had reservations for the hotel, and we had it in writing, and I came up to the teller, and I says, we'd like our room, please. And I gave him the paper for that it was,
the confirmation thing?
Yes, confirmation, so forth. And, he says, I'm sorry, we gave your room away. I said, what do you mean you gave your room away? Well, he says, it's Saturday night. I said, what do you mean it's that? It's Friday. We lost the whole day. How we did, I don't know. Anyway, we go to see a friend of ours who is in contact with aliens, matter of fact. As we walk in, he said, well, how are your backs from pushing the car? And we look at him. What do you mean? Oh, you're pushing the car. You had trouble with the car, eh? Right, yeah. Well, it seems that Fred was falling asleep at the wheel, and they removed the car and Fred and I into a spaceship.
Huh.
And we were there. Because then somehow when I was painting, I painted aerial shots. It's amazing. I painted aerial shots. I didn't know why I was doing that, but that's what I did.
Well,
that's what I saw.
Wow. Did Frank say he would ever come back?
Frank? He says, yes, he'll come back for me, and they promised me a ride in the spaceship. But he had trouble with the time element.
Oh.
He thought about it, he didn't know when he was coming back. And he said 5 years. Well, it's already 25 years. So it's not 5 years. Maybe it's 30 years. I don't know. But he said he will come back, and I believe him. He will come back.
Wow.
So that's it. Yeah.
Well, you guys, we're approaching the end of our hour.
Pardon?
We're approaching the end of our hour. Our show is almost up, our time.
Mm-hmm.
We only have a few minutes left, so I wanted to ask you if you wanted anything in particular to leave with our listeners about Frank or about your experiences or about, you know, anything you think people should need to hear about our future.
Well, one day I said jokingly to Shirley that I envied her all her experiences, and I hadn't even seen a measly UFO. And I thought that she would laugh, but she didn't. She looked at me seriously, and she said, well, all you have to do is ask. I said, what do you mean, just ask? She said, just ask. And it turned out that a couple of days later, I had to go from a two-hour drive to see my ex about some important papers. So I got in the car, and I said, okay, you guys, you hear me? I want to see a UFO. I said it over and over again. UFO, do you hear me? And then I forgot about it, turned on the radio. 2 hours later, I was at that house. And an hour into looking at papers, I suddenly got up. I don't know why. Went right to the window, looked out, And this is Seattle. It very, very, very rarely has blue skies. And the sky was the most gorgeous blue. And against the blue was this rectangular white object going slower than an airplane with a black undercarriage. And no tail, no wings. And I said to my ex, come, take a look. There's a UFO. And he comes over, and he's so disgusted. He didn't just glance, walked away, and he said, it's an airplane, not a UFO. He didn't even want to look. And he was just so disgusted he couldn't stand near me. But I stood there, and I said in my head, okay, if you're really alien, the UFO and an alien, do something to prove it to me. And suddenly, it dropped suddenly down and then on again.
Wow.
And then suddenly, it just blinked out, vanished completely. And then, about 2 weeks later, it was the a UFO conference in Laughlin, Nevada. And the eighth day, the very last hour, they were showing all kinds of UFO, all the different sizes and waves and lights and this kind and that kind. And at the very end, there was exactly that UFO, white with a black undercarriage.
Well, there you go. Well, you know
what?
We're out of time.
My only story.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming on to the show, Shirley and Dina.
Thank you.
You've been fantastic guests. Very interesting story. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having
me. Oh, you're welcome. Well,
thank
folks,
you.
That's our show tonight. We've been speaking with Shirley Klein Karsh and Dina Black. Dina has written. Dina Black has written a book about Shirley's UFO experiences that we've been talking about. The book is called The Artist and the Alien. It will be coming out shortly, so I think you should all check that out. I know I will be first in line to buy a copy. And I want to thank you all for listening, and I hope you can join us next week when our guest is Kevin Cannon, who's going to tell us about his experience on board a UFO involving 15-foot praying mantis-type ETs, who were actually very friendly. So it's a very interesting story, and I hope you can join us. And until next week, keep your eyes on the skies.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.